phone. Don't need no speedy, gotta get me home. Don't need no nothing, all I need is time.
Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. We had a great show last week with local Ken Foster, and he is the owner and founder of Terra Nova Ecological Landscaping. He knows his stuff, I can tell you that. He shared with us some of the basic permaculture principles that he works with in landscaping, and he does this work with both individuals in a residential setting and also commercial settings. I remarked that I could recognize Costa Noa, which is one of the favorite places Paul and I like to go. It is north on Highway 1 from here between, I believe, Davenport and Half Moon Bay. Very large grounds. They have lodging and a wonderful restaurant, and he did all of that years ago. He is amazing. If you missed that show, you can either listen to it online or download it. And the trick to doing that is Simple Life Radio, no spaces, it's all one word, simplelifradio.podbean.com. We will have a link from our website, pilgrimsway.com has a Simple Life Radio page, and all of our future archives and past will be listed there for just a link. You can just click that link. But that's coming soon. Our guest today, Michael Calabrese, is a returning guest. Michael is a local, born and raised here in Monterey Peninsula. He has Salon Park Avenue and is a stylist as well as a Carmel Valley resident, where he lives happily with his horses, chickens, his organic gardens. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you for having me again.
It's great to have you. And, you know, I had a wonderful Halloween. How was your Halloween?
Very nice.
Good. So now we can talk about Thanksgiving.
There we go.
And I remember from your last show that you were an avid cook.
Yeah, I love
it. You have like a philosophy about cooking, don't you?
Well, it's the basic needs of health and well-being.
Oh, don't give me that. You like to drink wine and invite friends to help cut up the vegetables. And it seems like it's part of your passion.
It is. Well, growing up in an Italian family, everybody cooks and everybody participates. And it seems to be the center point for everybody getting together and enjoying each other's company.
It is certainly a common ground. I know it's kind of a common thing if you have a event at your home, how everyone just seems to gravitate toward the kitchen.
Everybody ends up in the kitchen. No matter what kind of a party you're having, everybody ends up in the kitchen.
Well, you know, years ago, I mean long, long ago, it was seen as a way to determine whether you could trust a person. Because if they poisoned your food, they wouldn't eat it with you.
Here, you eat it first.
Yeah. So what are your holidays like? What are you planning on for the holidays?
Well, we're going to be at my mom's house this Thanksgiving. And our family has gotten so large that nobody could really hold it in their home unless we have outside to participate. But my mom and some cousins, and so my mom's going to do the turkey. My sister's going to make the spaghetti sauce, because we always have spaghetti with
an Italian Thanksgiving.
And I'm going to make a pear tort from some Asian pears from my garden, and a really easy recipe. It's all in the cuisine art. Make a sugar cookie, put it in the spring form, cook that for 15 minutes, lay your pears out, all sliced up and nice. And then in the cuisine art again, two egg yolks, a cup of sour cream, a shot of vanilla, and half a cup of brown sugar. Whisk that up and pour it over the pears.
Ooh.
Sprinkle with sliced almonds and throw it in the oven for another 25-30 minutes. And it's absolutely delicious. There's never leftovers.
350. So it doesn't burn.
No.
The last pumpkin pie that I made, actually Bella and I carved a pumpkin for Halloween. Of course, I realize now I carved it way too early. Like it didn't survive long enough to be around for Halloween. But we took the carvings and skinned them, and then took that, cooked the meat, and actually made pumpkin pie. And I wasn't paying attention, apparently, because I was doing the French apple, where you have the crumbles on the top.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it said to leave it uncovered until the last 10 minutes. So that's what I did. And when I pulled it out, it was like, whoa, that really didn't work. It was way too dense.
Trial and error, but I bet it was delicious anyway.
It was very yummy. So that's a pear tart. Now, what can you do with apples? Bella and I just recently went and picked, if any of you listening like organic food and you like supporting local organizations who dedicate their time and energy to organic food, there is a place called Cal Poly Organic Apple Orchards, and it's up in Davenport. Their address is Davenport off of Highway 1. And they have 10 different varieties of apples that are a you-pick situation. So nobody's there. It's all on the honor system. You go in and find the trees that have ripe apples and pick them. And we did that. We got wonderful apples. They are not as perfect looking as the waxy apples you buy in the store. You know, they have little insect
flaws in them.
Yeah,
but
they
taste
delicious.
They are
so good. So what do you got for us on apples?
Apples, you know, you could do a phyllo dough and slice them thin, brush butter on it, and close it up. Another one is with Nutella and thinly sliced apples on the phyllo dough and bake that.
Wonderful.
So you have a little bit of hazelnut chocolate and the apple.
Oh, yeah. That sounds yummy.
Or you could do just the brown sugar and just regular apples.
Yeah.
Without the
I love spice. Do you work with spice at all?
I do.
Uh-huh.
I'm not into really hot, spicy stuff, but I like all my herbs and spices. It just creates a whole... It brings things out in foods.
I think so. It's one of the ways that I get myself to eat healthier food.
Right.
I improve the flavor with some spice.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then I don't need the butter so much or...
I love the butter. And salt.
Wow. Now, Michael, the last time you were here, because you were here on the show with us September 28th, mm-hmm. For those of you listening, the podcast is up of that show. You can actually listen online or download to your smartphone, etc. You talked about a winter garden.
Yes.
And you said that was your favorite garden.
My favorite. It's everything we love to eat and is good for you. Onions, of course. Snow peas, sugar snap, snow peas, edible pods. The garlic is planting. After the first rain in November, you plant your fava beans.
And fava beans are nitrogen fixing.
Absolutely. You could rototill those things back into the soil.
Well, even just growing there, they revitalize your soil.
And cauliflower, broccoli, Swiss chard, kale, all of your greens. It's the perfect time of year for that
and
to start now.
I know you don't just cook for yourself, but how many of these plants do you need for you to have enough to live on? You know what I mean? Because you only take one you don't want to like chop
the whole
plant off.
I kind of go overkill.
No, really?
No, you take from the bottom leaves.
Good.
And that keeps the plant going, so it's going to keep generating more leaves and eventually go to seed, so you have seeds for next year. Or to share with somebody else. And I find at least 8 to 10 plants is sufficient. I give my mom, my sister, you know, and friends come over. So it's always there. What do you want me to bring if I get invited somewhere? What do you want me to bring? Oh, I'll bring the kale or Swiss chard or whatever. So some things grow a little bit more better than others. The Swiss chard can get really big and delicious. That's a great thing to make raviolis with. And the stems are very, very important. People sometimes throw away, they don't even know.
The stem.
That's the sweetest part of the Swiss chard.
I agree.
And those can be cooked down a little bit and chopped up and added to your mixture to make raviolis.
That's a great idea.
Which this is the time of year now you're supposed to make raviolis
for
the holidays.
So you actually make handmade raviolis?
Yeah, my mom gave me my grandmother's recipe. She had it all typed up. The dough, the filling. You make the filling the night before.
Yeah, let it sit.
Yeah, and it's just delicious. And if you don't want to do the dough part with the raviolis, you could stuff the manicotti shells or the seashells.
That's true.
And have those, put them in the freezer, let them freeze on a tray, and then put them in a bag so that everything's separate. So when you're working late and you got nothing to eat, you come home and you have something.
I love it. I love how you think. So winter garden, do you have pests in the winter garden? Seems like there's less bugs in the cold weather.
But the pests right now are the deer and the turkeys.
Right.
They got into my tomato patch and devoured a lot. So, but at least I got my stash of tomato sauce.
Yes, thank you. You brought me a jar of that. I love it.
Did you try it yet?
Not yet. I'm saving it. I enjoy just looking at it.
It's really good.
And do you have to fertilize the same for a winter garden?
I always kind of, before I plant, I'll add in some pheasant manure or chicken manure. And a couple of good things to add into are the bone meal and blood meal. And they're all natural products. And just to help out the soil, I did find out when sometimes tomatoes get the black rot on the bottom.
Yeah.
One of my clients, her brother-in-law, grows really good tomatoes. And so she called him for me because I was getting the black rot. It's Epsom salts.
That's blood magnesium.
Mm-hmm. Blood meal and bone meal. Mm. All of those, water it really well, it went away. It was a calcium deficiency, yep. I think, in the soil.
Yep.
And it worked.
That's amazing. So, I love it when you find home remedies for things.
Yeah.
Now, my tomatoes in Carmel Valley, I got a lot of tomatoes. Right now we're having green fried tomatoes because they just... Other than the little tiny cherry tomatoes, they did not ripen. Is that not enough sun?
No, this year we seem to be having a problem. I did the same thing because I didn't start them in a greenhouse or... Because when you buy them in the nursery, they're started in a greenhouse.
That's true.
I start from seed outside.
Yep.
It was a little too chilly throughout
the
spring.
That's very true. That's very true.
So to get a little jump on it, start them indoors or in a hothouse thing. And then get them in the ground. Because once they're in the ground, then they're going to go crazy.
On the other hand, green fried tomatoes are really a favorite.
Yeah, they are. They're good.
Oh, God. I'm having them at dinner, having them at breakfast. Yeah, green fried tomatoes. Now, you can use tomatoes, green tomatoes, for pickles.
Yes.
Have you done that?
Yes. A friend did that. And something that we did also last year was cabbage. And we made a...
like a sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut with whey.
Oh, I did not know
we made
you could do
mozzarella
that.
Cheese, and there's whey left over.
Yeah.
I didn't know it either. My friend Susie looked up and, there's a wonderful book. She's going to kill me. I forgot that. It's a cookbook, and it's wonderful, and it has all these little sayings. And anyway, she pickled the cabbage and made sauerkraut with whey. And so she put a cucumber in there. And I made a pickle, too.
Oh, that's great.
So just experimenting here and there with different things, really, you come up with some easy and pure things.
And actually, fermented vegetables is becoming more and more popular as we educate ourselves about food and food combinations and realize that a lot of the intestinal illnesses that people have, irritable bowel syndrome and... You know, things that progress to even worse situations can be completely avoided or remedied with a change in diet. And fermented vegetables is one of the most important aspects. I ran into a woman at a workshop who, now I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but she said for, I think it was 4 times a day, she had to have a cup size amount of, chicken soup, just basically chicken and broth with maybe some onions and some seasoning, and then she adds a tablespoon of sauerkraut to her soup. And it wasn't for a yummy, yummy experience, it was for a medicinal experience. And she said, I do not enjoy this, but you have no idea how this has helped my body.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I trusted enough to try it. So I've been trying to, I'm not really used to fermenting vegetables. It's not part of the culture that I grew up with.
No, neither did I.
And yet I know that our ancestors didn't have refrigeration. That's how they either preserved their vegetables through the winter, or if they had a lot in their harvest, that's how they preserved it so that they could trade it or whatever. So I know it's in our blood.
It is. Another thing that we've made was beet kvass as a drink.
Oh, I had that recently.
Isn't that delicious?
It is. I think it's a bit of an acquired taste.
It's
a little sour.
Well, a little bit, but the beets are so good, and the greens on the beets are even better.
Yeah,
I love those.
I've been using beet tops in my green drinks.
Yeah.
really good for kidneys.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
All of it.
Well, we have to take a break. We are going to be right back. We're speaking with Michael Calabrese, a local from Monterey Peninsula. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez, and this is Simple Life. We'll be right back. Break. We were talking about winter garden, and I know that's one of your favorite gardens, partially probably because of not having to water it so intensely.
Right.
But what would you say to folks who are afraid to get started or maybe have some trepidation, not knowing how or when to get started?
You know, neighborhoods can get together if there's an empty lot or a space somewhere. Somebody has a large piece of property there that's just empty. They can help one another, and everybody take a little plot or time and share in the process, mm-hmm. learning how to cultivate, learning how to plant, what to look for, what to plant where or next to. You know, there's a lot of things that I've kind of just learned by hit and miss, and having some help is really beneficial because somebody else is going to know an answer about something, and then you get to share everything.
Well, there's that whole spirit of conversation and sharing life experience. And
as you're working.
Yeah. And I know, you know, most of us who don't really live off the land like many generations back did, we still picked up some things from our parents or grandparents or aunties and uncles that we might not know or even rattling around in our brain. And when you get the right context together and there's a question or a curiosity, all of a sudden, hey, I remember Uncle Tom used to, he always said, put a pole by the, yeah, exactly.
And it is fun gardening with somebody. And you see their delight in, it's like, okay, let's put in a beet bed. Okay, so get the wire, get the dirt, get the wood, and in 2 hours you have a beet bed going.
Now, you said get the wire, get the dirt. you just rattle these things up. So if anybody's listening, Michael, you put down wire to keep the gophers out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And does that apply like everywhere or only certain types of soil?
No, I like to put it everywhere in my raised beds.
In your raised beds, yeah. And any kind of rooted vegetables like carrots and beets, turnips, kohlrabi, do they have a different kind of soil since you're going to be pulling them out of the dirt?
Well, they eat different nutrients, so that's why you always have to check back and put back whatever it is that you're taking out.
Got it.
Pat, planting the fava beans and legumes puts nitrogen back into the soils. So it's a nice winter crop too to get that stuff going. But you know, using all the broccolis and cauliflowers and stuff, and regenerating the soil. So now the next time when spring comes and you're going to do something else, pull everything out. I feed a lot of that stuff to my chickens. There's a collard greens that has really big leaves.
Yeah,
they love that. So I plant a lot of that because right now I buy lettuce from the produce mart to feed the chickens and pheasants because the greens help the yolks.
They need that, yeah.
And so this collard green thing is wonderful. It's some people call it a Portuguese kale, and other people have it as collard greens, but the chickens go crazy for it.
I've noticed that our chickens also really go crazy for any sulfur vegetable, you know, broccoli, cabbage.
Oh, yeah.
Do I have something else? I know that I do, but I can't think of it. So I've just noticed that, you know, they sort of have their list of best preferred.
Their favorites, yeah.
And then if there's nothing else, they'll eat what's there.
If it's leftover, yeah.
But so do we.
My chickens love leftovers, too. The salad with the onions, the avocados, the tomato, everything.
Oh, yeah.
They're waiting for it.
Yeah.
And they would rather have the leftovers than the lettuce.
Oh, really?
And so once they finish that, then they'll go toward the lettuce.
That's interesting. So you spend a lot of time in the garden.
I love being outside in the garden, yeah.
And you have an interesting work-life balance. How many days a week do you work out of the home?
3.5 out of the home.
So that's completely balanced.
It helps me sustain my life at home.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Because I have just as much work at home as I do.
I totally get it. I totally get it. Yeah, and in our case, you know, having a retail shop, we don't close the store for 3.5 days a week, right?
Right.
So it's a slightly different commitment level.
That's why doing a garden with other people can help, because it's less time that you have to take away from your work life. Not everybody could take 3.5 days.
That's true.
And so when you're working 5 days, you only have 2 days to do all the rest of the stuff in your home. And having help in the garden, it really, like, you take Tuesday, I'll take Wednesday, you know, it just works out.
Right, right. Well, that's a great idea, and I want to open up the phone lines if anybody has a comment or question for Michael. We're talking about having a garden at home and actually introducing more of a community garden idea to sort of pull together your workload and your fun increases. Give us a call. Our number here, 831-899-5792. That's 831-899-KRXA. And we will certainly plug you in when you give us a call. So I like the idea of the community garden.
Yeah, it's very rewarding when kids come, pick their vegetables, go home, take them home, cook them and eat them. That they really get a kick out of that. When people come over my house and we're out in the cook, come on, let's go get dinner. Mm-hmm. So we go out, bring a basket, pick things here, pick some of this, some of that. They're really amazed. A lot of kids don't really know where food comes from.
That is so true. That's so true.
The cookbook, Nourishing Traditions. And you can get it at your store.
At Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, we do have it in stock. It's called Nourishing Traditions, and the author's last name is Fallon. And it is a family favorite, I have been told.
It is. I have it in my living room, and I show it to everybody because it has some really cute little sayings in it.
Like what?
Like when you're cooking, if you're pissed off, don't cook. Because when you're cooking and you're happy and it's made with love,
yeah,
it really does come out better and better for you. They've done research on that.
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of a very famous doctor, Dr. Emoto, Matsuri Emoto, and he was first introduced, I think, to the Western world with his book titled Hidden Messages in Water. And what this scientist did was he studied the formation of water and actually measured it. Let's say one water container of water was sat next to, and the person was in a good mood, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And they really sort of consciously remembered great times in their life, uh-huh, etc. Okay, so they would take that water and they would have to freeze it in order to measure it, because otherwise it doesn't hold still. But honestly, they tried the same thing with someone in a bad mood and remembering really bad things that happened to them, and the water has a particular shape to it. It actually shifts in color. They've been experimenting with revitalizing bodies of water out in nature that are polluted using this technique. He's got probably, I don't know, half a dozen or more publications in English here in the U.S. But it's a fascinating piece of information to uncover, simply because it's something I think, you know, most of us haven't thought about. But this book has thought about it.
It does. So a hint, keep the cook happy.
Yeah. Is that why you serve wine?
Yeah. Get everybody happy.
I want to talk about shelter a little bit. So I know that you you have a place in Carmel Valley, and I wondered what you would be looking for today if you were to choose a place you wanted to live.
That's a very good question. I think that I would be looking for something with water.
Like a natural source.
Either a natural source or, well, natural source would be much better, but water and sun. Something that has a lot of sun, because you could always create shade planting a tree or putting up a tent, but you're going to need sun to grow things.
That's true.
Sun and water. Mm-hmm. The nutrients, you could revitalize soils and all that, you know, it doesn't matter so
much. What
about
location or neighbors, neighboring properties? I've heard from people, ideally, it's great to be next to BLM land, Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah, because you could go riding in there. It's open space, and so nobody's ever going to build up or put a freeway or anything. So, you know, you kind of want a little more open space around. At least I do. I like that.
Yeah.
Then you have creatures coming in, the deer, the turkeys. Everybody comes by.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And what about when you're planting your garden, what kind of strategy do you have? I mean, obviously you cook your own food, but do you think in terms of how much you want to grow and what your schedule is for canning or for, do you take things to farmer's market?
I don't take them to farmer's market because I think you have to have a organic sticker thing.
I see.
And I'm just backyard guy. So
yeah.
I grow things that I like the most. Kale, I use a lot. It's a quick, easy vegetable to get on the table. People love the way it's very simple. Use a little bit of water and chop it up, put it in the boiling water. In a few minutes, it's ready to go. Take it out, drizzle with some fresh olive oil and salt and pepper. And actually, people have commented, I made this great meal, worked my butt off. And that was the best thing in the whole meal was kale. Yeah.
You're like, great.
But so whatever I use the most, I tend to plant more kale.
Uh-huh.
And then depending on how things are going to grow, I stagger them toward the south. As further south we go, the lower we go.
Okay.
So, and it just depends on, like beets, you could never plant enough beets because the greens, you're eating the greens along the way. Everything, actually. The broccoli, the cauliflower, all those greens have those flavors. So I could do like a stir fry and put it over pasta.
That is so true.
And they're delicious.
I always use the greens to my broccoli and the stock. And people look at me like, really? Are you that poor?
Yeah. No, I like that. It's delicious.
Well, it's a good texture and it's a good flavor. And I don't know, it's got more of a creamier quality to it.
Homegrown stuff seems to have a little more sweetness to it, where stuff that has been fertilized and chemicals and sprayed, you kind of taste this bitterness. I was really surprised with the carrots that I grew and the broccoli. The broccoli tastes like butter, sweet butter.
Especially when it's young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in favor of a home garden, and I get back to that idea of community garden. I'm also really excited that we have as many farmers markets as we do locally.
We're very lucky.
We are very lucky, and at the same time, these are folks who work really hard, not only out in their land, and then to harvest it and package it, but then to pack it up and take it,
Bring
it to market. I mean, and they have incredibly long hours, so I try to always make a point of going to farmer's market at some point in time and getting whatever it is that I need and letting them know I appreciate them being there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's easy to take that stuff for granted. And now that people are getting more and more conscious about the impact of food choices on their health and their future, they're looking for healthy food, I think, more often. I had a question for you. Working with the public the way that you do, because you're a hairstylist, when you are working with people, I'm going to assume most of them are locals, what is the thing that you find is up with people? Like, what are they talking about? What are they concerned about?
A lot of health issues that actually go back to what we eat. Because we always talk, we're Italian, we talk about food all the time in our shop. And people are interested in what would be good for them and what they could grow, even if it's just the herbs. And that's a good thing, too. Start out with herbs. Grow parsley.
That's a great idea.
Parsley is a wonderful thing for people, for your body.
Yeah.
It's a blood purifier, and it's easy to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And start out growing herbs. Deer don't seem to want herbs, so that's a lucky thing.
Even better.
Yeah.
Even better. So people are kind of really thinking about their health issues.
A lot, because there are so many new health issues coming up that we haven't seen so much in the past. And it seems to trace back to food, and genetically altered foods seem to be kind of at the top of the list right now.
Boy, that is one of the things that I'm really aware of, and I don't understand, I really don't understand why we want to alter the DNA structure of our food. There's obviously no long-term study. You can't tell me there's no
nobody's long-term. Lived long enough.
I mean, the longer this goes on, because I guess it was really introduced, industrial agriculture on this level of genetically modified was introduced in the 50s, although we weren't really talking about it then.
Right.
And so as they study it with rats and so forth, they're finding, you know, the obvious tumors and issues like that, but also that the rats are becoming infertile, which, if you think about it, when you and I were in school, we never saw commercials or advertising for fertility clinics.
Mm-mm.
It just didn't happen.
No, there was a lot of things.
It was
that
usually
we didn't
the other
see.
Way around.
Yeah. Control.
But now it is prevalent.
Yeah.
It's prevalent. And I just wonder if people are kind of watching this happen, going, you know, that's different.
Well, you see it in young children, too.
How so?
Autism and stuff like that. You know, you see
imbalances.
Yeah. And I don't think drugs are the way to go to correct these things. I think hopefully, I don't know what damage is done when you're born, and if you can, with healthy living, turn things around. I mean, it's worth always worth a try, of course. And the cancer rate has kind of gone
that
through
is
the roof.
True. That
and
is
different kinds
definitely
of cancers.
True. Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, again, it's just something that we don't really know what we're doing. So when we have the choice, let's make a conscious choice to choose the right kind of food and follow up after Michael's suggestion of a garden.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one way to have your freedom. We are going to take our second break. This is Cynthia Fernandez, your host today on Simple Life with our guest, Michael Calabrese. Stay with us. I'm planning on going.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's all great films about environmental subject matter. You know, environmental awareness, I think, you know, can be difficult to take sometimes because it's sobering.
Yeah.
But just like our conversation about eating properly and having gardens, etc., it's better to know, and then you can make good choices. So I'm so glad that's happening in Monterey. We're going to be down there, Paul and I, starting at 7 o'clock and taking in some films locally. Farmers Market, that's where we left off. I want to know, as a local and someone who works with your land, what kind of concerns do you wrestle with?
If the bugs are going to eat my stuff.
So it's mostly like the pests. I mean, you go to all this work, you put in what you want to grow, and then someone else enjoys it.
Yeah, well, I've done Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts, but I never seem to get them because those seem to be the sacrificial plant. Aphids love those.
I have trouble with aphids on my cabbage.
And it's just, I just let them be there.
Yeah.
And then hopefully they don't go to the next
that's
plant,
right.
You know, and
it's your offering.
It is. And you kind of have to do it that way. If okay. you want to do an organic garden, you could do soapy water, the Dawn and all that stuff. It just comes right back, with, especially in the wintertime when if we're having some good rains.
Sure.
It's going to all come back. But I just work through it because there's always something. If you plant enough of a variety of greens and things, there's going to always be something there for dinner.
That's true. Now, I know I'm not hearing this much on the news, but there is a lot of news about fracking. And I did see something recently about it's like, it's a problem everywhere, but when it's in your backyard, it's more of a problem.
Yeah.
And there is fracking either in the works or planning to be in the works off the coast and in around our area. Have you heard about that?
I've heard a little bit about it, and the thing that came to my mind was what happens to the water, that there's damage to the water table.
Yeah, because when we were talking about choosing land a little while ago, you said, well, you know, get a well or a natural source of water. But if you do any kind of research about the areas that have had long-term fracking, there's a lot of information out there about how it has affected their water sources, whether it be their well, their city water, their natural springs, or lakes and rivers.
Yes, which affects the cows that eat the grass that grows on that property.
Oh, absolutely.
And anything that that consumes that water. And it hasn't been good reports. It's all been kind of harsh and
yeah,
bad.
Any reports that come out have been shocking.
Water needs to be pure. We need to, you know, everybody talking about keeping the planet pure and all that. Well, we have to start with water. Water is the basic of life.
And it's mostly what we're made of.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the biggest 98% percentage.
98% water.
Yeah, so you do water catchment.
I do.
How does that work for you?
It works wonderful. This last rain filled up the two tanks that I have there. They're not large tanks. I want to get a couple of larger tanks because even with a heavy fog, you could fill up a 50-gallon tub in no time.
Mm-hmm.
But with this last rain, they've filled up, they've overflowed, and I use it. I just throw a bucket in there and water what I need to water, and there always seems to be enough to go around.
And livestock, whether it's chickens or horses or whatever, they prefer rainwater over tap water.
And rainwater, if you notice your garden, when you're watering with the hose, it looks nice and it all grows. But when you water with rainwater, everything perks up.
Well, the rainwater, someone explained to me, and I'm not sure I got it completely, but as it's falling through the atmosphere, it's picking up nitrogen.
Nitrogen, exactly.
So you just totally gave your plants tonic. Yeah, they're happy about that.
They are happy about it. And everything after the rain, all the trees in the forest, everything perks up after a rain.
That's very true. Sometimes I think it's because they get a little massage.
Yeah, that too. We all could use a massage.
Well, my guest last week, Ken Foster, who professionally sets up rain catchment for different situations, was talking about how, you know, there are so many different options for rain catchment that you're really not locked into a big round tub that you have to bury under the ground.
Right.
I mean, it can be completely, like at the Secret Garden at our store. In the Secret Garden, we have a demonstration of rain catchment. There are two containers that are made by a company called Waterhog. You can look them up, waterhog.com. And the reason we chose these was because they're modular. They go right under the eaves. They're rectangular shape in a vertical position. They go right up under the eaves. You attach a spout from your gutter to the top of the little rain hog, and they're each like 150 gallons, maybe more.
Wow.
And the fact that they're modular, you know, when you save up a little more of your money, you add another one and can connect them all.
Well, that's nice.
And they're portable, so when you move, they go with you. Yeah, we don't own property, so we think about things like that. So there's lots of options, you know, and I think they have a couple of different colors, but they're kind of a tree green color, so they're not eyesores. Yeah, we have a sign that says this is demonstration water catchment. Here's the place you can go to get it for yourself.
Well, what also is nice about water catchment that it is also a gravity fed type of thing.
Absolutely.
You don't have to use a pump, no electricity, nothing. You just have a faucet bib and a hose and hook it up.
That's what we do. And actually, you don't need a lot of rainfall here on the coast.
No.
We get a lot of fog and dew that, you know, tumbles down the top of that roof and right into our water catchment. We use it in the garden. Yeah.
It works.
It's wonderful. And gray water is another idea that we're not really utilizing as a culture.
No, and I cringe every time I turn the sink on, or
I know,
because there's just water that just goes down the drain that is usable.
I call that virgin water.
Yeah.
And it has many uses, you know?
It does.
I mean, if you have ornamentals or any kind of plants in your yard, you're not going to eat that. Don't worry about what you know.
Soap or...
Yeah, I mean, biodegradable, I'm sure everybody's pretty much using at this point. But the use of water, stretching it and making it count, is really a good idea.
And roots actually filter things out of water.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people in our area are thinking about water in terms of whether to take the water source private. Have the locals here actually own and manage
our own water company. That would be very nice. I just read about that,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's a great idea.
There are a number of communities who have done this successfully. One of them I read about was in Boulder, Colorado. They are now... They're now in the middle of working to take over their energy, their electrical and gas energy company, as the same thing, just privately manage and having the information of how it has been managed be made public. I mean, we pay all this money, and we're all so busy in our lives that it's hard to even worry about it. It's like, get the check in the mail before it's late.
Right.
But when you do stop and think about it, or hear someone talk about an aspect of your own living situation you hadn't considered, then you kind of scratch your head and go, yeah, what about that? You know, how come we don't know about that?
And it would be nice to own our water again. We have a really good source of water. Our water is very sweet. When I was a kid, they didn't put anything in the water, and it was drinkable from the faucet, and it tastes delicious. And then as time went on, they put chemicals and this and that. Our dams just need to be kind of rebuilt and bigger and better and badder, and be able to clean them out, get the river flowing all year round. If we had a backup of water, we would be able to create a healthy environment. You know, there's a feud between the environmentalists and the whoever's, and everybody needs to come together. We need to be a group as one. This is our sustaining our lives here. So we need to come to some agreement on our dams and keeping our valley healthy and our water situation. I think everybody needs to give a little and participate.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, and that's always been a challenge when people have differing value systems. So if water only equals to someone a profit margin,
right, that's not what it's about,
and to someone else it means, you know, having a place that their grandchildren can live on their homestead.
Exactly.
Those are two different agendas, mm-hmm. at play, and that I think is in the mix.
Unfortunately, greed has gotten in the way of a lot of our lives.
But you inspire me, because you are not greedy. You love the quality of your life. You love the quality of your environment and your relationships. And I love meeting people like you. Thankfully, you're not the only person I've met like you, who only works 3.5 days a week. You're not trying to make a million. You're not trying to buy the home in Pebble Beach, you know? You're interested in living your life fully, completely, and happily.
Well, we're not going to get rich just working. And it's all about... The first time I went to Europe, I came home, I'm like, those people enjoy life.
That's it.
They take a 3-hour lunch, have a, you know, 6 o'clock, they're off. They spend a lot of times with their family and friends, and they just seem to enjoy life a little bit better. Their cities are built for more for walking and socializing more than our American cities, but it could be done. And I think Americans work too hard and don't enjoy life
enough. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I do. And, you know, that's why we try to have a garden at home. We've got chickens at home, and those things draw us home, and we enjoy being home.
And it's very rewarding going out getting some eggs for breakfast or picking some vegetables for dinner.
Oh, absolutely. Having fresh herbs.
Yeah.
For sure.
That should be everybody's thing this year, should be enjoy life a little bit more.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael, you know, the time has just flown by. We are just about out of time. I do want to thank you for all of your sharing. And I love the fact that you're speaking from personal experience and what you talk about. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed being here.
That was awesome. And I want to make sure everyone knows that we have a guest next Saturday on Simple Life. Dan Millman, who is an author of many, many books. My first introduction to Dan Millman was a book titled The Peaceful Warrior, in which he has a novel story that describes a gold medal Olympic gymnast who runs into this old guy working in a gas station, and the old guy teaches him about a lot of stuff he didn't really have any other opportunity to learn about life. And he has these encounters with things that a lot of young people do then and now. And the storyline continued, and he went on to other things. But he is going to be in the bookstore just before Thanksgiving on Friday, November 22nd in the afternoon at 2 o'clock with his daughter, Sierra. They have co-authored a book titled The Creative Compass. And I'm excited to share that with all of you. He's going to phone in next Saturday because, of course, he's on his book tour through the state of California. He will be available via phone, and we'll pipe that in and have that for you next Saturday. And so, once again, it has been a very fruitful hour. I'm so glad to be with you all and to share all this together. I hope you have a great week. Enjoy the farmer's market. Figure out some rain catchment. Enjoy life a little more.
Go play in the dirt.
We'll be back next Saturday, 4 to 5 on Simple Life. Stay with us.